Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, is Daf Tzadik Beit, and we're holding just about at the top of the daf. The last things that we had done, we were analyzing the psukim that described the fight with the Malach, with Yan Yaakov Avinu. And of course, I mean, that's what Gidon Ashe is all about. Where would you expect to find all of this, if not in Gidon Ashe? And we wanted to deal with Rabbi Hanina and the question of whether the Malachim are able to say Shira before they say three words of Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. And the last thing we learned was that Kivan Dityad Rishuta Dityad, maybe the pshat is that once already the Shem Hashem was mutter for the Malachim to say after they said Kadosh, 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 then it's even mutter to say Boruch Kvod Shem. Okay, we're up to then Vayasar el Malach, Vayuchal, Bacha, Vayitchanin. So this is the beautiful description in Hosea of how it is that Yaakov Avinu was fighting with this Malach, and he cried and begged him, and who cried to who exactly? Eini yodea miz naaseh sar lemi. It says over here, Vayasar. He became the one that was, I guess, supreme in this fight. So who exactly became the Tsar to the whom? Well, Kishu Omer, Kisarita im Elohim and Vatuchal. The Pesuk says, you, where he was given his name. And the Malach says to Yaakov Avinu that you were the one who actually made it, Vatuchal. So you came out on top. So clearly, Aviomer Yaakov Naaseh Sar L'Malach. So the Vayasar is, in fact, that Yaakov became the greater power over the Saro Shel Esav. Kishu Omer, Tzaini Yodea, sorry, Bacha Vayitchanin Lo. Who cried exactly? Eini Yodea Mi Bacha L'Mi? Kishu Omer Shalcheini. If the Malach has to beg Yaakov Avinu here in the Pasuk, and putting the two Parshas together, the Pasuk in the Torah and the words in Hosea, we understand that it was the Malach who was crying when he said, Shalachini and Aviomer Malach Bachal Yaakov. So clearly the Malach was the one who was begging Yaakov. Another way of understanding or diukim in this Pasuk, Kisarita im Elohim vim Anashim Vatuchal, Omar Rabbah, Remez Ramazlo. This was also a remez that the Malach was giving to Yaakov Avinu, that there was a Elohim and an Anashim that were going to be the Sarim that would be coming from Yaakov. So who is that? Well, Elohim always means Dayan. So that means that these are Musbachim Dayanut. So that's referring to the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. And who are the Anashim who are nonetheless Sarim? That's the Rosh Golash in Bavel, because in Bavel they don't have access to the smicha. They can only do the shlichut of the Besdin in Eretz Yisrael. So essentially, those are the two, Elohim, Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael, which is the Mishpachas Hanasi, also from Yaakov Avinu, and the Anashim is the Rosh Chulah in Bavel. But meanwhile, this was a terrible hint, because if there were only Anashim that would be Sarim, it meant that there was going to be a Galut, and Mikan, Ramazlo Gabur. Now getting back to the, I shouldn't go getting back, going forward really, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave through this Malach Ramazim to Yaakov Avinu of those great powers that would be coming from him, there was another more detailed nevius of this in a dream, and this was the dream of Yosef. So, of course, it wasn't Yosef's own dream. It was the dream that Yosef understood to be a remez to him, even though it was the dream of the prisoners that were in his power. They came to him for interpretation, and he understood that that was meant to imply things for him to hear. So here was the dream of the Tsar Hamashkin. He sees this beautiful vine. And on this vine, Bagefen Shalosha Sirigim, There's this beautiful vine, and it has three strong branches. Who are those three strong branches? Omrav Tio Barava Omarav Elu Shlosha Sarei Geim Hayotzim Yisrael Bechol Dor Vador. Pa'amim Sheshnayim Kan Ve'Echad Be'Eretz Yisrael. Pa'amim Sheshnayim Be'Eretz Yisrael Ve'Echad Kan. So this is a remiss to the fact that Klal Yisrael always has three very important people politically who are able to protect and support Israel in each generation, the Shlosha Sarigim, depending on the times. Sometimes you have two of them in the Golis, here meaning here in Bavel, which today would mean, let's say, Senator Graham Lindsay, I don't know. But there's people that actually protect Klal Yisrael. Sometimes you have two in Chutz Laaretz and one in Eretz Yisrael, and sometimes it's vice versa. So this one, this first interpretation that we have over here, Rebchiya Bar Ava, is from Rav, and this is a not meaning the Goyim, but meaning Yaakov himself. So who would that be if it's Jews that have tremendous influence politically? Yoiv Rabbonan Inayu Rabbona Ukva, both of these, this Rav Ukva and they were grandchildren of Rav through his daughter, and they had a tremendous amount of political influence, were able to protect Klal Yisrael from the damages of the government decrees against the Jews, and so on. Rava says, actually, this is referring not to Jews, but to Goyim. And the Shlosha Sarigim are three politically influential figures among the Goyim who are Malamdim Zchus al Yisrael b'chol dor v'dor. So we find three influencers in each generation among the Goyim, and they try to affect good things in the governments for Klal Yisrael. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer. So there's going to be quite a few different ways of understanding this dream. And Rabbi Eliezer says the Geffen is a general reference to the world as a whole. So that is the Olam, and it's talking about the world as a whole and what supports the world as a whole. Shlosha Srigim are the Yovais. So that would be Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Then it says Vehi Kiporacha. It was blossoming. And Altan Nitzah. And now its fruit were coming out. That's a reference to the Imahot that were bringing out the Shvatim for Yisrael. Hivshilu Ashkelot Anavim, and then the ripening, the clusters ripened, and now we had grapes. That's a reference to the Shvatim of Yisrael themselves. Said Rabbi Yehoshua to Rabbi Eliezer, what would be the point of showing Yosef HaTzadik dreams about the nature of the past? He's very aware of the past. So we don't show a dream to give information about what was. Isn't the point of a dream to be able to foresee what will be coming and that you needed to understand in order to see your life in the context of what's going to be? Therefore, I suggest that actually, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, Geffen is a reference to the Torah that will be given. And the Shlosha Srigim that are supportive, that are keeping up this Geffen, is Moshe and Aaron and Miriam. Vehi Kiporachat Altanitza, that's a reference to the Sanhedrin, which is the ones that actually are Mechadesh and are the Meira HaRoah. So they are constantly bringing forth these new blossoming new ideas. Anavim, and then when there's things that are actually edible that are coming out on the clusters, those are referring to the tzaddikim in every generation. Shebechol dor vador. Ah, as usual, when it comes to Agadata, we still need access to Rebbe Lazar HaModoi. He's always the super duper interpreter of Agadata. So these are all good attempts, my friends, but they don't come to Rebbe Lazar HaModoi. Here, his advantage was that he's looking like Kula Bechad Makom. Look, this is one grapevine, right? So if it's one grapevine, it has to be referring to some interrelated whole in one place, not stretched out all over time and so on. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar HaModai said the Geffen is a reference to Yerushalayim. And in Yerushalayim, you have Shelosh HaSrigim, those three major branches. And what is that? The Beis HaMikdash. The Melech and the Kohen Gadol. And Ikaporachat al Tanitza is a reference to Pircha. Pircha is always Pirche Kuhuna. So this must be a reference to the Pirche Kohanim. If Shilo Ashkelotea Navim, that refers to the Nesachim, which were the most beautiful of the Korbanos, and this is a remez to the Korbanos overall. Wow, we've got yet another pshat, Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. This is already number six, Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. He says this is reference to the wonderful matanot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to be giving Klal Yisrael, the Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. The Geffen, that of course is the Torah. The Shloisha Srigina, the matanot in the Midbar, the Be'er, the Amud Anan, and the Man, and Hikaporachat al Panitza, that's the fruits, that's a reference to the Bikurim. If Shilo Ashkelotea Anavim, those are the Nesachim in the Beis HaMikdash. Number seven, Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba Omar. Geffen refers to Klal Yisrael. V'cheinu Omer, Geffen mi Mitzrayim Tasiya. We see that the Pusik in the Tehillim refers to Yisrael by Yitzias Mitzrayim as a Geffen that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took out of Mitzrayim. And the Shlosha Srigim are the Shalosh are going. Elo Shlosha Regalim Shi Yisrael Olim Be'em Bechol Shana V'Shana. So this is when they go up to the Beis HaMikdash. V'hi Kiporachat, what does that mean? It means that the Kiporachat always means a Pirchei Kuhuna is always a reference to coming into puberty. And therefore, if Klal Yisrael is Porachat, it means Yigiyaz Manam Shal Yisrael Lifrot V'lirbot, it's time for Klal Yisrael to explode in reproduction. V'cheinu Omer, indeed, that's what happened in Mitzrayim. U'v'nei Yisrael Poru V'yishretzu. So clearly this was an incredible six in each birth. That's a tremendous porachat. Alta nitza, what does that mean? It means the fruits are starting to come out. That means the geula has arrived in Mitzrayim. Higia zmanam sheYisrael yigael. V'cheinu omer, we know that this lashon, vayez nitzcham al begadai, v'chom al boshay yegalti, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here, we're talking about the geula to come, and the nekama of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Edom, and his coming back from Edom, Kavayocho, wearing blood-spattered things, and the Malachim asks, why are you all covered with red? And he speaks about how it is that he smashed Esav, and their netzach, their lifeblood, got scattered, splattered all over me, and that's why I'm so dirty. And that is itself a raya, if you use the word chet in a way that allows it to be nitsa, because remember, you've got these Ashkenazim, they don't know how to pronounce a chet for their lives. So either they pronounce it as a hey, you know, or they pronounce it as a chof, but they can't even speak Hebrew. So because of that, the chet is a remez to a hey. And we often find that the drosha is actually mixes the two, and we learn netzach as nitzcham, as hey. So that's nitza, which is over here. Alta nitza is a simen of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's nekama on the Umei Sa'ilam. Reb Barnea is illustrating the previous expositions, which we had the reference to the Nesachim, and he's trying to give you a sense of how you did the Nesachim. He didn't have gold handy, so very nice. Thank you, Reb Barnea. That's an excellent show and tell. And please tell Mommy that we appreciate it. Next time, tell her to send something a little bit sparklier. And what is the Hivshilu Eshkelotea Anavim? There's lots of grapes on those clusters. That means it's time for that bitter cup of wine. So here when we were talking about Mitzrayim, it was a reference to the Kosot, and those are the bitter cups that Klal Yisrael is going to have, that Mitzrayim is going to drink when Klal Yisrael is freed. And this is Rava. As Rava pointed out, we have three times in this dream And it mentions that each one, it mentions the word kos separately. So why do we need that? Shlosha kosot. We've got three completely different mentions of the kosot. So kos paro biyadi, and then I was sochet into kos paro, and then I took kos paro, and I put it into paro's hand. But I mean, you could have said it, you know, you didn't have to mention the word kos each time. So this is talking about the three kosot hatarela, those bitter cups of nekama that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will force Mitzrayim to drink. So one of them, of course, was the terrible things that happened to Mitzrayim during the days of Moshe Rabbeinu by Yetzias Mitzrayim. One of them is referring to the kos at the time of Paro Necho when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Mitzrayim and took over Mitzrayim at the time of Paro Necho. And one of them has not yet been given to Mitzrayim to drink, but that's the third cup that will be given on a beautiful tray of poison, which will be given together, she'atidah lishtot im kol ha'avdei kochavim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nekem the Dam Yisrael in the Geula coming soon. Omar le'Rav Abba le'Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba. Ki dorish l'Rav, l'hani k'roi b'hargadita. I want you to know that when Rav himself would say over these psukim, and he gave a drasha in the Haggadah, he said it the way you did, that it's a reference to Yetzias Mitzrayim and to all of the things that would happen there. He did it like you did. Omer Abshimim ben Lakish. Actually, so this is another remez. This is our eighth remez that we've had in the stream. Klal Yisrael is like a grapevine. So wouldn't you, if you were a farmer, wouldn't you like to have a grapevine that consisted of nothing but these beautiful clusters of grape, and that would be an entirely effective grapevine? Well, it doesn't work that way. A grapevine has all kinds of different parts, and it needs all of its parts. So there's zmurot. The zmurot are the branches. You aren't going to do much with your grapes lying all around the floor and getting ruined, would you? So those zmurot are comparable to the people who actually support everybody else. And those are the ones everybody, he's just a balabas. You know, what's a balabas? The support of the whole system is the Baalei Batim. Those are the ones who've made some money. They don't just go around talking about it. And the Ashkelot, those are the Talmidei Chachamim. Okay, those are the grapes that you want to bring out that are the richest and have the most delicious wine. And what about all of those leaves in your grapevine? Ah, those alim. Those are the Amei Haaretz. And you've got to have leaves. I mean, they gather the energy and they protect the grapes. And they, if you don't have leaves, you're not going to have very much of the grapes. And then you even have those parts that don't seem to do very much, and they stick out all over the place, and very often you got these tendrils that are just lying there. They haven't found anything to catch on to, and they just stick out of the vine. They don't do very much, and indeed, there are a lot of reikanim, Shebi Yisrael. It's a lot of useless people, and those are the people that are not learning, not producing, but they're part of the grapevine. And you've got to have those tendrils because some of them are going to catch on, you know? And that's what the message meant when they sent to Eretz Yisrael, they sent a message. Remember, Liboy Rachamimit Kalia Aliyah. Those clusters of grapes, they better ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Rachamim on those leaves, which are the Amei Haaretz, because Ilmole Aliyah Lomit Kaimin is Kalia. If you don't have any leaves, you don't got any grapes, and therefore you have to recognize you are one entity. Another understanding of this sugya bichlal, the general sugya, remember, started off with our understanding of the support for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children that could even come from the Umas Ha'elah. So we spoke about the three Sarei Goyim, maybe. And this is a fascinating part of the way in which Hoshea says over his Nevi'ahs, in which we have a very strange kind of remez that is not at all clear, what it was referring to. And over there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ve'ekrea li b'chamisha asar kesef. So ekrea, we're going to see, means I barter for myself for 15 coins of silver. 15 coins of silver? Yep. And also, not only that, I had to pay a chomer se'orim and a letech of se'orim. Well, okay. So some remez, chomer and a letech would be 30 and 15 if you're measuring it actually in the units. So what the heck is it referring to? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzadik. First of all, the word ve'ekraha. I was ekraher. What is ekra? Well, kira, the lashon of kira, means mechira. It's a reference to an exchange for value. So when you say something is sold, so this is exactly the way that Yaakov Avinu refers to mekivri asher karitili. And that is talking about the way that he paid Esav so much. He gave him all of the things that weren't chashiv to him from everything that he had made in Chutz La'aretz. He piled it up in this kri. So it actually was like a big pile of cash. And I exchanged that cash for the mokum kvura in the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. So we see that koriti has this meaning of purchasing. So then that would mean I, referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I bought Klal Yisrael for myself. And when it says on the 15th, it means on the 15th day of Nisan, which was, of course, the day Shabbo Nigalu Yisrael Mitzrayim. So it was on the 15th of Nisan that I bought Yisrael for me when I took them out of Mitzrayim. What's the mashmaut of kesef? Well, kesef always means that which you are desirous of. Remember that the word nichsof nichsafta lebet avicha. It's something that you have a desire for, kisuf. So this refers to the tzaddikim. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what he's able to have is because of the tzaddikim that make it possible to be his. And we know that the Torah uses in the Nevi'im the lashon of kesev for tzaddikim, because it also says in Mishle that the tzror ha-kesev lakach biyado, this is referring to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu let the tzaddikim, before the Churban, the tzaddikim died, and he took them away in his hand before the Churban. Chomer se'orim v'letach se'orim. Okay, now what is that referring to? So the units that we measure, the actual chomer and letach, is always in saw. A chomer is 30 saw, and a letach is half of a chomer, so it's 15 saw. Put it together, and you end up with 45. So it's a reference to 45, something of very chashuv, and that refers to the arba'im v'chamisha tzadikim, and it's because of them that the olam is mitkayim. So there are two groups, one of 30 and one of 15. So it depends on the tkufa. I wouldn't know whether we're talking about any yodea, im shloshim kan v'chamisha asar b'eretz Yisrael, im shloshim b'eretz Yisrael v'chamisha asar kan. Now, at the time of the, we saw before that there's a difference. Sometimes in Bavel you have the rov, and sometimes in Eretz Yisrael you have the rov. But here where we're talking about the entire world, and you've got 45 people that allow the world to exist, and they're mentioned as two groups, the mashmaut is that they have two different functions, and therefore they would be some in Eretz Yisrael and some in Chutz La'aretz. But when we find, fascinatingly, in a completely different Nevi'ah of Zechariah, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Zechariah to throw the money into the Beis HaMikdash, so he says, Va'ekha shloshim ha-kesev, v'yashlich oto beit Hashem el ha-yotzer. So here in Zechariah it says, I took the 30 pieces of silver. So those must be a reference to this previous Nevi'ah, which we're talking about, the silver that Shlomo HaMelech perceived, and I threw it into the Beis HaMikdash, the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, the Yotzer. So it must mean that the 30 are permanently, at that point, they were permanently made part of Eretz Yisrael. Hawe omer, Shloshim be'eretz Yisrael, v'chamisha asar kan. Now, where would you find those 30 people in Eretz Yisrael? So undoubtedly, they would be found in these incredible shuls that are built to look exactly like the Beis HaMikdash, everything covered in gold, thousands of people coming to daven, the best chazanim of the world, and that's where you would find these people if you want to find them. No, says Abaya, actually, these are the people that you'll find in the back room, that's usually under the porch, where all of the people that aren't worth anything, where they go to daven, where they can actually daven, you know? So some shuls have that, where there's actually a little room on the side, and you can have a real minyan there. That's where you'll find them. So Rubayu, most of them are going to be found in the Beit HaKnesset part that's Tutei Avta. It's underneath the bottom of the porch. They have a miklat there sometimes. So, you know, the tzaddikim can actually be found there, but don't expect to find them in those big, beautiful shuls. Okay, and what were these 30 pieces of silver that were thrown into the Beit HaYotzer? That was Aino Dichtiv. That's why it says, actually, right before that, very strange. This is such strange psukim. So we find in Zechariah that it says, Va'omar aleihem, im tov be'enechem havu schari, v'im lav chadalu. Vayishkelu et schari shloshim kesef. These are such strange rumazim in Zechariah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I said to them, and this is a reference to speaking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was speaking to mankind. So I said to them, to all of the Umay Sa'ilam, I said, look, if you want, you know, you could pay me my sakhar, what you owe me. You could pay me whatever it is my fee is. And if not, so then just hold off, you know, just cut this out. Okay, it's weird. And so, sure enough, the nations of the earth, Vayishkelu et schari, they paid me my God fee. And what was my God fee? Shloshim shekel, so shloshim kesef. So what is that? So Rav Yehuda Omer, these shloshim are a reference to the shloshim tzaddikei umos ha'olam, she'umot ha'olam mitkayemim aleihem. So basically, if you give me back the tzaddikim that have allowed you to survive all of this time, that you always managed to produce on the earth 30 real people among the goyim, and that's when it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Zechariah, go throw them into the Beit HaYotzer, which means put them into the Beis HaMikdash. And that's what I did. Vashlichotam Beit HaYotzer. I took them from the goyim, and they became part of Klal Yisrael, which means that these are tzaddikim that are noladim, whose neshamas were meant initially to be amongst the Umos HaOlam, and now they are no longer protecting the Umos HaOlam, and now they become part of the Zchus of Yisrael. Whereas Ula says, no, these are a reference, yes, you're right, to 30 pieces of silver which protect the Umos HaOlam, but those aren't people. Those are the mitzvahs that the goyim were mekabel on themselves, and they actually were mekabel, but they only keep three out of all of those many mitzvahs that they were mekabel on themselves. And the Maran Mifano actually brings rayas to what those 30 are, and it gives a whole list of what those 30 mitzvahs are, which we won't go through here, but we've bumped into them often, that these are subcategories of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, and they were included as Ramazim and so on. So even though they're not separate mitzvahs. And so as we'll see, one of those mitzvahs was, of course, Arayas, which is part of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. But we list separately, and of those Arayas, well, they also agreed not to write a ksuva for same-sex marriage. So even though the marriage is okay, but at least they don't glorify it with a ksuva. So that they still keep, at least they did at the time of the Gemara. It's no longer applicable. But ein mekaymim ela shlosha. So out of all of those mitzvahs, there's only three they still keep. One of them is that they don't write contracts for homosexual marriages. She'ein kotvim kituvah lezecharim. One of them is that even if they would be ready to reduce human flesh to meat, at least they won't advertise it. So, ein shoklim basara meit b'makulim. So they have some derech eretz for the dead. Some. I mean, as Richie knows, they'll get around in a half a year maybe to pretend that they burnt the body and they buried it and they'll make a funeral. But this is like literally a half a year later, right, Rich? Could be even more than that. And one of them is that they still give honor to the Bible. So you walk into the court, they'll say, put your hands on the Bible. So at least they're mechabed et haTorah. Okay, so this is the end of this wonderful break for Agadata and understanding all of the inyanim that went into Gidan Hashem. And now we get back to the actual dinim of Gidan Hashem. So back in our mission, the Gid HaDasha is not noheg ba'of, b'teisha in lo kaf. So you say the oaf does not have a kaf, but of course it has a kaf. I mean, take a look. You could open up your chicken and take a look at the thigh bone, which of course is that the larger bone over that thin bone that comes out of the drumstick. And you'll see on top of there's meat, which is, of course, the muscle that is the equivalent of the calf. And that's the muscle of the thigh. So how can you say it doesn't? I mean, it's ridiculous to say, how could any organism not have a calf? It's absurd. Of course it has a calf. I don't mean it doesn't have a muscle. I mean, it isn't shaped like a spoon. I mean, you've got used to the idea of calf hayorech, meaning the muscle. But it doesn't mean a muscle. It means a spoon. So when the Torah talks about a kaf hayorech, it's talking about a muscle that is shaped, is so curved and rounded that it's shaped like a spoon. But if you take a look at the muscle of a bird's thigh, it is not shaped like a spoon, and it's actually spread out. And because of that, it is not a Gidan Hashem, because it isn't kaf. Why, Rabbi Yirmiyah, is this a function of the particular phenotype, or are we talking about a genotype over here? Suppose we have a particular bird, I mean, it can happen. So it's a mutated bird, and it happens to have a muscle that is rounded. Would that make its Gid HaNasha usher because it is kaf? Or what about, on the other hand, what if you've got a behemoth that is mutated? And it doesn't have a shaped muscle that is like a spoon, and its muscle has been actually flattened out. How about that? Itle the behemah v'lo agil. How does this work? Does it work in terms of the phenotype? Is it baser dideas minan, or is it baser mine? Is it according to its genotype? Take a good question. Anyway, getting on in the Mishnah talks about what is the halacha of the Gid HaNasheh of a fetus, the shliel? So we had a machlokes. The Tanna Kamma said, v'noheg b'shliel, and Rabbi Yehuda says, eino noheg b'shliel. And then we have that additional statement, v'chelbo mutar. Is that chelbo mutar? And is that part of what Rabbi Yehuda says? No, einanoy b'shliel v'chelbo mutar, or are these two different things? Rabbi Yehuda's statement ends with the words that einanoy b'shliel. Then the Mishnah says, and everybody agrees that chelbo mutar, or is this part of what Rabbi Yehuda was saying? So Amar Shmuel, no, the part about chelbo mutar was not Rabbi Yehuda. It was the Stam Mishnah. The Stam Mishnah was saying, everybody agrees that chelbo mutar l'divrei hakol. Okay, chelbo meaning what? Who's chelev? Is this referring? It might be referring to the chelev of the gid, or it might be referring to what we were just talking about. Noeg b'shliel, eino noeg b'shliel, and then the chelev of the shliel What's the din of the chel of a fetus? And then, I mean, if that's what it's talking about, then the Mishnah doesn't make much sense, because we saw before there's a big machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanna Kamma about if you find a fetus that was in the mother when it was shechted, so that was a machlokas. I mean, if we're talking about chelav d'shlil, and you're saying everybody agrees, this is what Shmuel is saying, both Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanna Kamma, meaning the Stam Mishnah and Rabbi Meir, would agree that the chelav of a shlil is mutter. That's not true. We've seen that machlokas many times already. The Tanya, the Braita brings out the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Noeg b'shlil, the Braita is first talking about the Gedan Nasha. V'chavo asur, the very Rabbi Meir. And of course, this is referring to a ben bekua, which is a ben tisha, so it's a full-term fetus. It was shechted, the mother was shechted while it was in the mother's womb, and this was the machlokas that we know so well between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, according to which Rabbi Meir holds, once you have a full-term fetus, it is no longer included in the koba behima, because it's a separate behima, and it's not kosher based on the mother shechita. It's an independent organism, and because of that, it has its own Gidan Asher, and it has its own Chelev. That's Rabbi Meir, which is very consistent. And Rabbi Yehuda, again, consistently says, well, I mean, if it was shechted in the mother, so then I don't care if it's full term, it is considered to be completely mutter. And it's and therefore, it means anything, including the part which is the Gidan Ashe, if it would have been a separate organism, which it isn't. So Eil, he says it's not Noeg in the Shlil, and what looks to you as Chelev is actually just a piece of meat on the of the mother, and it doesn't have any din of Chelev, because the Torah never said anything about this Chelev, and that would be, as Rebbe Lozer, Omer Rebbe Oshaya explained, and this is the way we've learned it again and again, and of course I wouldn't put anyone on the spot to ask what we're talking about, so we'll review it for the 761st time and assume that this time it actually penetrates. So, he did it again. He did it again. It's amazing. So, speaking about how something can take place right under your eyes and you mamish will not see it, even though you're expecting it, right? Okay, so this
Rebbe, I just want to remind Rebbe that the record is 800 with Rebbe Prado. So, 761, we're on the way, but we're not there yet.
Okay, so you've got another Arboim Pa'amim. All right. So, as Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Oshaya explained, this machlokas between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda is a machlokas about a full-term living fetus that was removed after the shechita of the mother from the womb. And this is Rabbi Meir Lishitaso and Rabbi Yehuda Lishitaso, which we've seen, that they disagree about whether the shechita se'em is bahanya. So the same way they disagree about whether it's an independent organism vis-a-vis the shechita, they are very consistent, and they disagree about whether it's an independent organism vis-a-vis its own Gidan Asha or its own Chelev. So, according to Rabbi Meir, it's its own organism. It's not kosher to eat with the Shchita Sa'im. It needs its own Shchita. And if it needs its own Shchita, then it also has its own Gidan Asha, and it has its own Chelev. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a piece of meat that happens to be walking around. And how could a piece of meat have a Gidan Asha? And therefore, this could not be what the Mishnah means, which Shmuel is claiming. The Mishnah says, V'chel b'mutter, that's L'kulei Alma, it's not part of Rabbi Yehuda, it is everybody's Shita. It's not everybody's Shita. Okay, so then it's clearly not referring to the Chelev of the fetus, which we know for a fact cannot be Divrei HaKol. So who is he talking about? So maybe what he meant was the chelev, not the chelev of the shlio, the chelev of the Gidan Nasha. Well, that's something else. So, Ela chelbo de git. So, in other words, what it was saying over here was that Shmuel is saying that when the Mishnah says Chelbo Mutar, it means everybody, not only Rabbi Yudah, everybody agrees that the Chelev of the Gid HaNosha itself is not one of the Chelevs that the Torah asserted, and it's mutter to eat the Chelev. But that's not true either. How could Shmuel say that? We know for a fact that they actually argue. We know it from the Brit of Amiflet Pligipa. We know that there's a machlokas about the chelev of the gid itself. Take a look at this Brit, the Tanya. And we've spoken about this earlier in terms of how much you can trust and so on. So, the Tanya, the gid anashe, according to Rabbi Meir, you have to dig out the chatet acharav. You have to dig it out through the entire thigh, which means you're going to leave the thigh looking like, whoa, it looks like it's been through hell. And the chatet acharav v'chol makom shehu. So any kind of nerve that comes out of the main sciatic nerve and penetrates into the muscle, which there are so many dozens of, my God, you're going to have to cut out every single one of those. And you've got to dig out the shuman, so the fat, you've got to dig out meikaro all the way from its bottom. This is going to be, this is Rabbi Meir, so how could you possibly say that the chelev of the gid would be mutter according to Kulei Alma if Rabbi Meir says you got to go for it and get every last bit out? It's Rabbi Yehuda who says it's mutter, because Rabbi Yehuda says, gomamoim ashofi. All you need to do is cut it off at the level where the muscle is flat on top, and then on top of the muscle, you don't see any kind of fat sticking out, you don't see any kind of nerve sticking out, and then it's kosher. Okay, so obviously they do argue about whether the chelev of the gid is kosher or not, so how could Shmuel claim that the Mishnah means the chelev of the gid is mutter l'kulei alma, not only according to Rabbi Yehuda? This makes no sense. Oh, wait. Of course Rabbi Yehuda is meida that Rabbi Meir says it's usser. What Rabbi Yehuda was, what Shmuel was saying is that What Shmuel was saying is that everybody agrees that midiraisa it's mutter. Yes, I know there's machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda and the Braita, but that is a question of whether midrabanan, because of the, we talked about before, when we were talking about the Mishnah and Psachim, about which gid it's talking about that you have to burn on the 16th. So Moda Shmuel, Rabbi Meir, that Klal Yisrael was mekabel on itself not to be eating the, even the shuman of the gid. And that, of course, Shmuel understands that Rabbi Meir holds that midrabanan it's usher, but what he meant was that midiraisa it's mutter, and we know that that's the case because take a look at this braita. The braita says v'sham no mutar meikar adin. It actually is mutter to eat the chelev of the gid, except that Yisrael kedoshim nagubo yisur. So Klal Yisrael's makabel on himself. Treat this shuman as if it's chelev, and see it as an extension of the isra of gid hanasha, and therefore halacha lemaisa, you're not able to eat it because there's an isra d'rabbanan. I'm assuming that this braita is like a stam mishnah. This is saying according to Rabbi Meir, and gufa, what it's saying is that midiraisa mutar min ha-Torah. And when it says that it's usher, he means Yisrael Kedoshim, right? And the Yisrael Derabbanan. Maybe not. Maybe, actually, this is Rabbi Yehuda Shita. And maybe Rabbi Yehuda is made it that it is usher Midrabbanan. And Rabbi Yehuda, when he said that there's no din of the Shuman, he was made it that Midrabbanan there is. But it could be other Rabbi Meir. It would be usher even Midiraisa. So how could bring a riot from there? No way, Jose. Lo zaka daitach. Don't even think about it. The Braita says beferish, the Tanya. Gid anashe michatet acharav b'chol makom shehu. You got to dig that gid out. Okay? So that's also another one of Naftali's upcoming songs. Dig the gid. And that would be according to the Shita of Rabbi Meir. He's the one who says you have to be mechatet acharav, so dig the gid. But nonetheless, it says v'sham no mutar. Oh, now who's the man the armor who says you got to dig the gid? That's Rabbi Meir. And it says Shamno Mutar. Well, how could that be? Didn't we just say that the Shamno is Usur according to Rebbe Meir? Obviously, it must mean Shamno Mutar Mini Raisa, but it's when it says over here that everybody is Maida, he means, and that's what Shmuel understood, even Rebbe Meir is Maida Mini Raisa, there's no Isur of the Shuman Agid. So that's clear, that must be what Shmuel meant. That's how to understand the Mishnah, and the Mishnah means Rebbe Yehuda says, Einu Noeg B'Shriel, stop, full stop. Continues the Mishnah. V'shamno Mutar, not referring to the Shmuel at all, but going back to the Gid Anosha itself. Shamno Mutar, meaning B'Diraisa, it's Mutar. Fine, the fact that Yisrael was Noeg B'Yisr is not what our Mishnah is coming to address. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, Bar Shmuel Bar Marta, Omer Rav, when the Torah asked the Gid HaNosha, you can't eat a Gid HaNosha to save your life. You might as well chew on a piece of rubber. What kind of nourishment are you going to get from a piece of rubber? The Gid HaNosha is like a stick of wood. What's the point of eating a Gid HaNosha? The concept of eating doesn't even apply. So obviously, when it says lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael git anasheh, it can't mean that stick of wood, that's the git anasheh, can it? It's got to be referring to the edible parts of the git anasheh to which the word don't eat would apply. And therefore, it must mean, says Rab, lo asra Torah eleknok nochebo. The only part that the Torah asserted was the part of the extensions, those little shoots that come out. This knoknot is the same word that we would use for the vine, actually. So those are soft branches, which are nerves that go into the thigh muscle, and those are edible. But the actual nerve itself, the sciatic nerve, is like a piece of wood. And therefore, the Torah would never have said, don't eat it, because you can't eat it. The Lashon Achila doesn't apply to it. Ula says, no, come on. The Torah says, don't eat the Gid HaNosha. That means don't eat the Gid HaNosha. Don't start being smarter than the Torah. And I'll say, but you can't eat the Gid HaNosha. Well, if you do, you're going to be over. It is a piece of wood. You're right. And the Torah said, this particular piece of wood, you can't eat. So it's referring to Torah Chivalov. The Torah considered you to be Chayev as if you ate. That's the point. Om Rabbi, that makes more sense to me. Kavasi du Ula Mistavra. Because we find the same idea in what Ula said about Chelev. The Omer of Sheshes, Omer of Us. Chutin Shebechelev Asurim. You are actually not chayev on those thin threads that you'll see of chalev that penetrate into the meat, which you often find. Yet the Torah, when it answers chalev, is referring to that thick membrane of chalev. The fact that there's are extensions of connective tissue that support it and actually go into the muscle, that's not called the chalev at all. And of course, it's usur min rabbanan, but you're not chayev if you would eat that chalev. So what does that imply? That implies, says Abaya, that when the Torah said chalev, it meant chalev. The thing that you identify as chalev, not the chutim of the chalev, it means the main body of the chalev. So therefore, if the Torah said the gid anasheh, it meant the Gid HaNasheh, the same way that it meant Chelev, not the little extensions, the finer nerves that come out of the Gid HaNasheh, just like it didn't mean the extensions of the Chelev, which is the same material, but it's not what it's being referring to in the Pasuk. So Hachanami, Gid Amar Rachmana. The Torah spoke specifically about the Gid HaNasheh, not the Knoknot. I think that makes much more sense. Gufa. Let's take a look at this din that Rav Sheshes just brought about the chutin shebechelav. Amar Rav Sheshes, Amar Rav Asa, chutin shebechelav are asuri min rabbanan, but you wouldn't be chayev because the Torah was only referring to the actual chelev. Now, how about the chutim of a chelev in the kidneys? Well, same idea. Shebekulia, you've got a lot of these thin pieces of white chelev, a whole kulia. That's the chelev she'ala klayot that the Torah keeps referring to in the din of the korbanah. So the whole kulia is covered with an identifiable white chelev all around. But then, even if you pull that off, there's a lot of smaller connective pieces of chelev that extend into the kidney itself. And they, too, are usher, but they're only usher minerabanan, the ein chayavin aleim. Now, the thing is that there is the white, that white part of the kidney itself. Now, that's something else. There, we're not talking about the chelev she'al haklayot. There, we're talking about a thick piece of what looks like fat that comes off of the chelev she'al haklayot, and it goes into that hole in the actual klaya, and it fills up the sinus, the kidney's sinus, which is filled with that white material. And that is chelev. And the question is that usher or is that mutter midiraisa? That's a machlokas. That's called the loven of the kulya, the white of the kidney itself. And Rebbe and Reb Chiya argue about that. We don't remember who said what, but we know chad amar aser v'chad amar mutter. So chad aser v'chad shorit. Now, Rabba used to be memar title. He didn't take any chances. He would actually dig it out of the kidney itself, and he was machmer to get every last bit of it because he held, you have to be cheshish that it's an iser d'oraisa. So he would be memar title, and Rabbi Yochanan would be memar title. But Rav Asi, he was mekel, and Rav Asi was goyimle, and he cut it out only at the surface. Now, Omer Abaye, I think Rav Asi makes much more sense. Kavasi the Rav Asi mistavra, because look, Rav Abba quoted Shmuel, Omer Rav Abba, Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, that the din is the chelev in general. Chelev shabasar chofeoto mutar. When the Torah talks about chelev, it's always the chelev which is on something. So it's the chelev which is al haksalim, the chelev al haklayot. So what that means is that if the chelev, I mean, the truth is that you'll find as you cut through that whatever area you're cutting through, you may have gotten through a layer of chelev that is on top, so to speak, when you're looking at that meat of the animal. And then you start cutting it, and you'll find, as you know, from the meat that you buy in the butcher shop, you'll find a lot of chelev inside of the pieces of meat that you're eating. Well, all of those are covered by muscle in the living animal, and they're not al, they're in, and that doesn't count. So when it says that the chelev is osir, it's always al haksalim, it's always al haklayot, which means that in general, any chelev that you find inside of the animal that is covered by pieces of meat, even if it's separable, it's still considered to be not al, but in. So the basar is chofeoto. If in the living animal it's covered by muscle, so then it's not chelev. So what do you see from there? That when the Torah uses the word al, it means al. So alma she'al ha'kisalim omar achmana v'lo b'toch ha'kisalim. Well, if that's true as a general rule of chelev, it should also be true about the al ha'klayot, same word, and referring to the klayot, which is what Rav Asi tainet. We're only going to aser the chelev that is on the kidney. I'll cut it all off with the top. So yes, but I don't have to go after it to dig it out, go into the renal sinus. I don't have to do that. And hachanami she'al haklayot amar rachmana v'lo betoch haklayot. And therefore, I think Rav Asi makes the most sense. Okay, wonderful. We'll get into these details, Bezrat Hashem. on Sunday.